Very welcome, Nina Landau, to the Docs Film Festival. Very welcome to our little interview about your film.
Great to be here.
Circus Zonder Tent. Is that how you pronounce it? Can you say it?
Yes, Circus Zonder Tent. It's in Dutch. And then I've seen that in German they made a German translation, which I find very nice. And then the international title is My Family is a Circus. But all three titles are the same film.
Let's start with your protagonist, Nina. Where did you get to know Romy? Were you looking for her? Were you looking for someone who travels a lot, who lives the life of a nomad? Or did you just, by chance, got to know her?
Well, actually, I came up with the idea to make a movie about a circus because I wanted to make something for a younger audience. And then I reflected on, well, what did I like when I was a child? And it's been a long time ago, of course, but when I was little, I liked circuses. And I had this book of a little girl that joined the circus and that did this great acrobat tricks and had these really nice show costumes. And so it made me think, well, circus today is not so much present anymore. So are there still people actually working in the circus? And if they are there any children? And so I started just calling organizations in Belgium and asking them, well, where can I find a young circus child? And they told me that actually there aren't that many anymore, and that the circuses that are traveling are mostly children from abroad, from Italy or from Germany or from other countries, and then they come here and they go all over Europe. But then they gave me the contact details of this one family, the family Morrissey Hartman, and that's how I got to know them and how I got to know Romy and her brother Quentin.
So that was very lucky that you chose Romy for your film. How would you say a child protagonist has to be? Because you then went to know them. I think you went to know the family and you talked to Romy and her brother. Why did you choose Romy and not her brother, for example?
Yeah, well, actually, it was a decision that was very hard to make because I liked both of them, of course. But for some reason, I had a deeper connection with Romy, and I found her. I think both children, both Romy and Quentin, are not. I've seen children documentaries where the protagonist is very, very verbal, and I found both of them that they weren't actually super verbal, but that they had this interesting interaction between the two of them. And so it just made me question all the time, like, but who is the protagonist? Will it be Romy? Will it be Quentin? Or will it be the both of them? And then I decided just, you know, I feel something I can't really explain rationally, but I felt something, a deeper connection with Romy. Maybe it's because she's a girl, and maybe it's also because she's the youngest in the family, and that I just felt that the story had to be told from her perspective. But I found it very, very important that Quentin had an important role to play as well, because you know, you see in the film that Romy and Quentin, well, they are together all the time. So there could not be a film without Quentin anyway.
So would you say that a lot of your decisions that you take while making a film, you make because of your feelings?
Some decisions are made by the mind and other decisions are made by the heart or the belly. And it's really difficult to distinguish the difference between both times. And sometimes it's a combination of both. And that's then when it becomes easy, if both things work together. But yes, there definitely are decisions that you make by heart or by feelings, because I think very strongly, if my feeling is telling me something, then it might also evoke feelings in the audience. Things that I'm feeling might also be things that other people are feeling, or not. I mean, it's not an exact science, but feelings are... You try when you make a film, I think you try to look for what is universal versus what is unique. And then you make a combination of both these elements, and feeling is a very good navigator in between the two of them.
And talking about Romy and her brother, for your film, you were very lucky that you had the two of them, weren't you? Because if you don't have the brother of Romy, you should have been interacting a lot more with Romy.
Yes, and that was something that I made, that for me, I wanted to make a film, and so that is a decision by mind in beforehand. I didn't really want a film where I interviewed Romy directly. It's not because I don't like the genre. It was just something that I wasn't really interested in doing so for this film, because I felt, you know, I just rather want to be close to the family and have the feeling that you get this really intimate look into their world. And I felt that it might be more, that it would feel more distant if I would interact directly in an interview with Romy. And so in that sense, it was really nice to have Quentin there as well, because the two of them interact with each other, and then you see what happens without actually me having to ask Romy to tell about these things.
Is that also where the idea of the letter that Romy writes to her classmates comes from? Because somehow Romy is telling the story of herself.
Yeah. And in that sense, for me, Romy is actually the narrator of her story. The letter was actually a creative way of using her thoughts and feelings to communicate what she lives through and what her life looks like. The form of the letter was actually my idea, because I was inspired very much and touched very much by this scene that we shot of these classmates that wrote this letter for Romy. And I just thought, this is such a beautiful thing to see, that these classmates tell Romy that they are going to miss her. And so it was my idea, and I talked about it with Romy, like, what do you think? Would you be interested in sending a letter or making this film a letter for your classmates? And she agreed. And so the letter was written on the basis of the many, not interviews, because interviews sound too formal, but more, you know, talks and discussions that I had with Romy in a very informal way when we were just there. And then the letter was constructed, and I constructed it, well, from my point of view in first instance, but then I made it a dialogue with Romy, because I found it very important that the things that were said in this letter corresponded with what she told me and how it felt for her. And so she asked me to change things, saying that this is not exactly how I feel, or this is very important to me, or this is rather the way that I would say it. So it was actually a kind of collaboration between us that I was really thankful for.
So Romy participated actively in the film, or in the text that she reads in the film, and how you shoot maybe, or what you shot.
Yeah, because it was all just based on these talks that I had with her that were sometimes very intimate. And then I would ask her, is this the sort of things that you would tell your classmates? And then she would tell me yes, or she would tell me no. And so it gave me an idea of how this letter could be constructed in order to also tell the story and the images that we shot and the scenes that we shot with her and her family.
She actually returned to the same class when the film finished, because when I think of a circus family or a girl traveling with her family, I could imagine that they never stop, that they will still go on and on and on with their caravans. But it seems that they have something like a home where they return to.
Well, the thing is that they had for a while a place in Belgium where they could stay, and where Romy and Quentin went to the same school, and a little school on the countryside in Belgium, and where this school was very open to find solutions for their online tutoring. And so, like you say, they left to go perform, and then they would come back for a few months, and then they would leave again for a few months. And so in between, there was this school that actually felt like, I think, a bit like a home for Romy and Quinton as well, because that is where their teachers were, that is where their classmates were. But then, you know, over time things changed because Romy and Quinton, well, they became a little older now and they had to change schools. So I was lucky to be able to show the film in Romy, her class, in a moment in time where in June, I think it was last year, where we showed the film in her classroom with her old schoolmates, but it was her last year in this school. And so mm-hmm. she had to change schools, which for me at the moment is not really clear how the situation is at the moment, because they are in France and they are performing again in an attraction park, an amusement park near Paris. But I don't think that they are working. The last thing I heard is that they were actually waiting again to be able to perform because of all these lockdown measures. So yes, this school was for them really important, but then, you know, they grow up and they have to change schools. And then I think for them, that is a big change as well.
And do they all the year round live in the caravans? Or they have any, yes, they don't have a house where they return to, maybe, really, like you say, the school would be a home?
Romy and Quinton told me that they have never lived in a house. So they don't actually know what it's like to live in a house. Of course, they do see it when they go visit friends or family that live in houses, or, you know, Romy and Quinton, when they go play at some of their classmates' houses, they see and they realize what a house looks like, of course. But they find it's rather strange, you know, to have people living in a house, and they say, oh, no, we can't really imagine what it feels like. And then I think it was Quinton that at some point was saying, like, it's so strange that people have so much space to live in. As if that he just felt that it was really nice to live in this cocooned caravan with the four of them.
And did you get to talk about things like money and belongings and also friendship with the two of them? Because all these things that are around us every day, they are so different in their lives. I guess in a caravan, they don't have a lot of space to have things.
Mm. What I found very interesting is that, well, we talked with the parents, of course, as well, because we had a very good understanding with them. And then we realized that we had such a different lifestyle. And they would tell us, like, yeah, you know, we don't have any mortgages to pay. We don't have any debts to the bank. We just have our caravan and the money that we earn by living our lives, and we spend it on things that we find important. And I found it very touching that the things that they found important was, for example, food. And I don't mean it as a basic thing, like, because you have to eat, but more like a thing that it for them it really was this family ritual to have, for example, really expanded breakfast time together in the morning. And because for them it was just important to spend, for example, their money on to spend the time together at the table and eat. And I found that very interesting, because we went there, and on so many occasions we just, you know, we participated in these meals, and you could feel that eating was very important for them, not because they were hungry or starved, of course, but just because for them it was a really important thing to be at the table together and spend time as a family together. And I think that also reflects the way that they are towards things and towards, you know, material things, and just like, okay, we don't have as much stuff as other people do. But then on the other hand, I think that sometimes people underestimate what they have, because, for example, they do have a fridge, and they do have a wash machine, and they do have a PlayStation, and they do have television. So they have things, but I think they have less things than most people who live in houses.
What about friendship? What about having friends and being able to see them or not, and have to leave and get back? Maybe to fall in love comes a little bit later, but friends and being able to see them, did you talk about that?
I talked about that as well with the parents as with the children. And you know, what I found very touching is the fact that they live together so closely all the time, together with the four of them, that you could imagine that they don't really need friends, but that is not the case. I mean, they have a really tight family bond between them, but all of them are really fond of their friends as well. And so they have friends that come and visit them, or when they are in Belgium, they go and look up friends. Or when I talked with Quinton and Romy about their friends in school, it was very obvious that they missed their classmates very much. And I remember the day that they that said goodbye when they were left for France, and you know, the scene where in the beginning where Romy is helping to pack all the things, and at some point Quinton's best friend and his parents came over to say goodbye, and that it was really, friends are very important in their lives as well. But they are used to living with distance in friendships.
And then they go and to live in an empty theme park. Yeah. What a great place to make a film, isn't it?
Yes, for us it was just so weird to be there. And we were impressed by this park that is empty at a certain point in the day. And then all through the day, there's like lots of people coming in and there's lots of noise and there's things going on. And then doors close and suddenly it's just the four of them living all the way back in the theme park. And it's so quiet and there's all these nature sounds. And it's just Romy and Quinton having the park to themselves. Again, I think this is, you know, it's almost like, it could be a dream for every child to live for a while in a theme park. The other side is also very important, that they did enjoy being there and they did have fun being there, the two of them, but they also miss being around other people.
It's again very lucky that Romy has her brother, and then they can be the two of them running around having fun. And could they really use all the attractions?
Some attractions were closed after closing times just because of safety measures. But for the rest, they could just, you know, go wherever they wanted to go, because there was no staff anyway. So, you know, it was really the park theme closed and they said goodbye to the staff working and like, oh, see you tomorrow and have a good night and we'll see each other back in the morning. The doors closed and the only people that were staying in were the family and were the two of us, my boyfriend and I, who were filming. So it was just this really, yeah, really special experience to be there. And I remember many, many of the nights that we just left in the total dark, because they really had their caravans all the way back in the park and there were no lights in the park. And so we had to take our car from all the way back in the amusement park and drive it up front, and there were no lights, and it was just such a strange feeling to drive around in an empty theme park.
So you stayed there overnight as well?
No, well, during our first research period, we stayed a couple of nights, because actually they have two caravans, and so they invited us to stay a couple of nights in the other caravan, which was really interesting and a good way to getting to know them very quickly on a really good base. But then for the actual shooting days, I decided that I found it important to be able to take a step back also at the end of a shooting day, because shooting days are anyway really exhausting. And you have to know that I was 6 months pregnant at the time as well. And I just found it important to be able to come back to our, you know, we had a bed and breakfast nearby, to come back to our own place and to reflect together over the things that we had seen through the day, and to take a little distance from the family and discuss what we had seen. And also to have, you know, just to empty a little bit the mind and to recharge the batteries, our own batteries, literally the charging of the batteries for the equipment, but also our own batteries, to be able to, again, the next day, be there with the same energy. So I found that very important too. And also to leave them in their privacy as well. I mean, we were there all the time, and they allowed us to you know, to be there whenever we wanted, But then we also didn't want to just, you know, cross any boundaries and to say at a certain moment, okay, guys, we're going to wrap it up today. And, you know, enjoy the rest of the night together in family and we'll see you guys tomorrow. Because I think that's important as well, that you do not overcross these boundaries with your presence as a video or as a film crew.
Okay, so you would say making a documentary film, it could easily happen to be too close.
Oh, that's a difficult question, but I think you know, people that you are filming, they open up to you and they are they can show themselves in very vulnerable ways, and it's important as a filmmaker to be very much in consideration that these people are putting and that they open up their life for you. And so I don't know if there's something as too close. Maybe if you get yourself too much implicated in the story, that it might be that you are too close to your characters. I think you need to have a certain distance as well, but you also need to be in there to be able to connect with your characters.
Yes, but did you have, for example, some material that you didn't put inside the film because you said maybe Romy is showing or saying something that you think, no, this is a line I'm crossing, I shouldn't show to the public, because you have to be very, you have to consider this, that you are showing her life to the public.
Yeah. Well, I think we actually had these considerations concerning a scene that is actually in the film. And it's the scene where Romy is doing these exercises with her mother. For me, it was a really important scene, but I also was worried about what will the public think of this and think of Tamara, the mother, in this scene, because, you know, Tamara is a really loving and caring mother, and I saw that all the time when we were there. But in this scene, she's also really strict, and she's also, you know, kind of harsh towards her daughter, who is telling her, I'm in pain, and she's like, shh, you have to keep on going. And so we were really in doubt whether we should put it in there, but I also felt that this is actually one of the core scenes of the movie, because this is actually what circus is about, I think. Like, these children grow up in circumstances that their parents decided for them. And these children have the same dreams at the moment, and they want to live up to these dreams. But there might come a time where they question these dreams and these things around them, what their parents are doing to them or asking them to do. So for me, it was really a very ambivalent scene that I found very important to be there. And so we decided to put it in there. I found it very important to show, of course, the film to the family at first, because I wanted to hear what they had to say about it. And in no way that they were offended by this scene. And they didn't ask any changes in the edit that we had, because they just told me, like, look, you captured life like it really is. This is life like we know it. And so then I knew that I made the right decision to put this scene in there.
And did you have any problems with the film, or does the family have any problems? Because what you are showing in a way is something like child labor. Mm. The girl and the boy, they have to, in a way, work for money. And in this scene that you are talking about, but also in the scene where it's raining in the end and they have to go out at stage, and Romy says something like, sometimes I really don't feel like performing. This all could be a lot of material for discussions in this way.
Yeah, and these were things that we were thinking all about as well throughout the whole filmmaking process. But, you know, I could have decided to make a film about focusing on, is this child labor and is this okay, and do we need to make it forbidden for children to work in these ways? But that was not the kind of film that I wanted to make, and it's not up to me to make these to judge over this. But I know that I certainly felt really mixed feelings about it too, certainly because I was pregnant, and so I was just so open as well for what, as a parent, how do you influence your children and what do you ask from your children and what pressure do you put on your children? So I was really sensible to all these questions. And so I think the fact that it's just touched upon just opens the discussion and opens interesting viewpoints on this whole theme. Because yes, they are working, and yes, their parents, the family earns money through the work that they do as a family. But then, you know, it's been a tradition for so many generations that it's just, it's difficult to judge. What I feel is important is, will there come an age at which Romy or Quinton says, hey, actually, I don't think I want to be in the circus anymore. And I think I want to do something else in my life. And so sometimes I think, you know, I'm just going to keep on checking in with Romy and her family and just hearing, like, what are you guys up to doing now? And because I think in the next few years, when both of the children will grow up to adolescence, that there will be very interesting changes in how they will, yes or no, pursue their dreams.
So you're still in touch with them?
Yes.
And how do you decide when to stop filming, for example? Because your project is showing everyday life of this family. But in some moment you have to say, well, that's enough. We have enough material or something like this. But as you are telling, as you're talking about your characters, I can imagine today it would be interesting to see what, how they developed. And in 2 years, it would be interesting to see what they think. So how do you come to an end?
Yeah. Well, for this film, there was just a practical argument, and that is that the film had to be delivered in the beginning of this year. So at a certain moment in time, I just had to stop filming and start editing to get the film ready in time. But like you say, if this deadline wasn't there, maybe I would still be filming. On the other hand, I think I felt at the time that we had spent a lot of time with them in the amusement park there, and that the story for me, that I saw what I had to see in the amusement park, and that there were probably not going to be any big changes anymore to the things we had already filmed. But I would be super interested in just, you know, maybe hearing in 5 years, where is Romy now and what is she doing now and how is she working in a circus with a tent, for example? And then, you know, maybe there'd be a second film, or maybe there'd be another film in which we use the older material again to have her look back at her childhood. So anything is possible. But in this case, we just had to stop filming because the film needed to be ready in time.
Is that some reason why you became a director? That phrase that you said, anything is possible, and you somehow are taking the decisions about all the project?
Well, actually, my path to being a director is a bit of a strange one, in the sense that I was not trained as a filmmaker. And I am actually a criminologist, and I studied also political science. And so I was on a very different career route. And at a certain moment in time, I started working as a journalist. And that's where I found that actually I was just so much into stories, and that daily reality has so much stories to offer. But then I found that day-to-day journalism wasn't for me enough, and that what I was really interested in is documentary filmmaking, because it just gives so much more depth to these realities that we are facing just every day. And so that's why I became a director, but I am also a producer in documentary films. So I have these two viewpoints. I have the viewpoint as a director, but I also have the viewpoint as a producer for other people's projects. And it's just, for me, there's always this sentence that comes back in my head, and that is that, you know, reality is sometimes stranger than fiction. you know, sometimes things that happen in real life are just so strange and interesting than the things that people make up. But I do like fiction, and I do very much enjoy series and crafted stories as well. But I just really have this great passion for real life stories. Because I think it also helps us to understand the world around us better in many different ways.
What was it exactly, or especially that of this film, that you learned while shooting with Romy and her family?
I think the most important thing for me was that it was just stating the fact that we as people have just so many prejudices, and that we just before we get to know people, just often judge about their lifestyle choices. And that the lifestyle that Romy and her family have is so different from the lifestyle that my boyfriend and I are having. But despite the fact that our lives are so different, that we were able to establish a really deep personal connection between us. And that for me was just really, really important, and a really important lesson that you can disagree on many things and you can have different opinions on things, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have to talk to each other, that it's always interesting to keep talking to each other, and it might even be able to, you know, establish interesting relationships even with people where you feel that they are very different. And that was something that I also wanted to have as an element a little bit in the film. Okay, Romy and her family, they live a very different life, but also, like, what are the things that they have in common with other families? And there are many things. They do homework like other children. They have pets like other children. They celebrate birthdays. They play. They have a family, a mother and a father. For other children, all these situations are also very recognizable. And instead of focusing on what makes us so different, it might be interesting in asking the question, like, what do we have in common?
If you can open up like you did in your film, it might make the discussion or the conversation even richer, isn't it?
Yeah, you just have to be, I mean, you can decide to be open to viewpoints and to lifestyles that you might find very strange, but then also learn a lot from. And there were just things that we took away as well from being around this family and now being a little family ourselves, because my son is born now. And for example, this idea of spending time together at a table is just an idea that I very much support and that I recognize in my own family as well, and that I would like to pass on my own children as well. Like, this is a moment that you spend time together and that you talk to each other, and where, you know, this family bond can only become stronger.
Yeah. And you as a filmmaker, what are you up to next? Because you have a whole world open where you can shoot a documentary. But where are you focusing on?
Well, you know, this last year has been such a weird year for everyone. And so I decided to focus for the moment on, you know, my baby, and to say, okay, well, you know, life has come to a standstill for everyone in the world. So I'll just, you know, try to enjoy as much as possible the time that I have extra now with my baby. And I think this will be the case until at least the end of the year, and probably just, you know, until we're just back in normal conditions, because it's such a strange world out there for the moment. But that doesn't mean that I'm not looking for inspiration and that I'm not open to these new stories. And what I am very much interested in, and that's because of my background as a criminologist, is just making a criminal or a courtroom documentary, which, you know, these days they are very popular and everybody tries to make one. But from my own background as a criminologist, I would really enjoy making this, because it would just bring together two things that are very important to me, like this criminologic knowledge and this documentary filmmaking knowledge. So that would be really interesting to do.
I want to wish you all the best for you and your projects, and of course for your son as well.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for taking your time to talk today to us about your
film. It was really nice. I want to thank you for taking for showing our film to your audiences, and it's really always nice to be able to talk about it as well. And it's such a pity that this cannot go on in live conversations because of the corona, but I think this is a very good alternative. So thank you very much.